Well, if you've been around for the past few Sunday evenings, you'll know that we've been looking at a sermon series called Move for Mission, where we've been looking at a number of people in the Bible who responded to God's command to move, to physically relocate. And Elise reminded us of one of them. Last week, Mike talked to us about Jonah. What other characters have been mentioned in these evening services? Who else have we looked at in these evening services? A little quick reminder test for you. Who else? Moses. David. Did we look at David? We did? I must have missed that one. One field to another. Hosea. Caleb. Any others? Yeah, Hosea, I think, got a mention. According to the sermon series leaflet, Hosea was getting a mention. And the thing about the people that we've looked at, most of those people that we've named, they're what we would class as sort of some of the big names of the Bible, really, aren't they? They're the people who either wrote the books. I mean, Moses wrote five of them, we think. David wrote a load of them. Or they had books written about them. They're the big characters of the Bible. And so this evening, we're going to look at someone who's the exact opposite of that. Someone who is a very, very lesser-known character in the Bible. He hasn't got a book written about him. He never wrote any books. You may even never have heard of him. But he does exist in the Bible. He's only mentioned twice in one letter of the Bible. His name is Epaphroditus. It's not a disease. It's a name, Epaphroditus. He gets mentioned by Paul twice in the letter that Paul wrote to the church at Philippi. So let's fill in the backstory. Paul, the Apostle Paul, visited Philippi. We can see that on the map there. On one of his missionary journeys. It was actually his second missionary journey. If you want to know what happened when Paul visited Philippi, you can read about it in Acts chapter 16. It doesn't seem to have been a long visit. When Luke speaks about it in Acts, he refers to all the time references as days, in a few days, and after a few days. So it seems that this was a visit that was not a lengthy visit because it was only measured in days. And among those who responded to Paul's message was a lady called Lydia. She was a woman from Thyatira who was a dealer in purple cloth. And she was obviously regarded as the main convert, because if you go to Philippi now, you will find there a Greek Orthodox church dedicated to Lydia. And so they built a church in her memory at Philippi. You can go there now and see it. It was during this visit to Philippi that the famous occasion happened where Paul and Silas were thrown in prison and they were praising God at night and there was a violent earthquake and they were released. Do you remember that story? That was in Philippi. The jailer and his whole household came to faith. And at the end of Acts chapter 16, we read that Paul and Silas, after they'd come out of prison, went to Lydia's house where they met with the believers and encouraged them, and then they left. So quite a short visit, but a very dramatic visit. But during those few days, enough people came to faith for a church to be started. Lydia, the Philippian jailer, his household, there were enough people who came to believe in Jesus for there now to be a church in Philippi. And then a few years later, Paul passes through the area again on his way into Greece, and then on his way back when he was making his way back to Jerusalem. And that's the only contact that we know that Paul had with Philippi. But even though it seems like it was quite a short time that he was there, this particular church seemed to have really taken Paul to their hearts. They really seemed to have had a particularly strong affection for Paul. They loved him dearly. They wanted to support him in the work that he was doing. And so when Paul wrote to them, one of the things that he says in his letter is this: in the early days of your acquaintance with the gospel, when I set out from Macedonia, not one church shared with me in the matter of giving and receiving except you only. For even when I was in Thessalonica, you sent me aid more than once when I was in need. So uniquely, Paul says, this was the only church that actually took the trouble to help him out when he was in need, to send things to him. They'd taken him to their hearts in a very real way, and they sent him help when he was in trouble. So we now fast forward a few years from those visits, and we reach a time in Paul's life where Paul has been arrested. He has appealed to the Roman emperor. He's been taken to Rome, where he is being held prisoner. And once again, the church in Philippi hear that Paul is a prisoner, and so they want to do something to help him. And so they decide to send a gift to Paul, who is a prisoner in Rome. And they choose one of the members of the church in Philippi to the person who will take this gift to Paul. And the person that they chose is Epaphroditus. That's where he comes into the story. And so the first part of the story of Epaphroditus is that it starts with a go. The church at Philippi say to Epaphroditus, go to Rome. Go and take these gifts to Paul. Go to Rome. And we know that he did, because Paul mentions it in the letter, and he says, I have received from Epaphroditus the gifts that you sent. So, who was Epaphroditus? What do we know about him up to this point? Other than the fact that he was a member of the church in Philippi, we know absolutely nothing about him. Some of the books and the commentaries that I was looking at came up with some very fanciful, maybe he was this, or maybe he was this. But the reality is, we know nothing about him other than his name. He was called Epaphroditus. He was a member of the church in Philippi. That's all we know about him. The church that is dedicated to Lydia in Philippi actually does have a picture of Epaphroditus in the lobby. I'm not sure how accurate a likeness it is, but there is a picture of Epaphroditus in the lobby of the church in Philippi. But apart from his name, we know nothing about him. If he hadn't been sent from Philippi to take these gifts to Paul, we would probably never even have known that he existed. All we know about him is that he heard the call to go, and he went. So let's now read how his story unfolds and how it ends. And we read that in Philippians chapter 2, verses 24 to 30. If you have a copy of the Church Bible, it's on page 1114. If you haven't got a copy and you'd like to have one, raise a hand and someone will immediately rush and find a Bible and put it into your hands. All the words will be appearing on the screen and you can follow them on the screen or in any other device of your choice. One or two Bibles needed. Thank you, Hannah. Page 1114. And remember that when Paul is writing this, he is still a prisoner in chains in Rome, awaiting the outcome of his appeal to the Roman emperor. And so he says this in Philippians chapter 2, starting in verse 24, I am confident in the Lord that I myself will come to you soon. In other words, Paul is saying that he's quietly confident that his appeal will go well, that he will be released from his chains, and then he'll be free to go and visit Philippi and the Christians there once again. But then he says, but I think it is necessary to send back to you Epaphroditus, my brother, co-worker, and fellow soldier, who is also your messenger, whom you sent to take care of my needs. For he longs for all of you and is distressed because you heard he was ill. Indeed, he was ill and almost died. But God had mercy on him, and not on him only, but also on me, to spare me sorrow upon sorrow. Therefore, I am all the more eager to send him, so that when you see him again, you may be glad and I may have less anxiety. Welcome him in the Lord with great joy and honor people like him because he almost died for the work of Christ. He risked his life to make up for the help you yourselves could not give me. And so from that passage, we get the story of what happened. Having gone from Philippi to visit Paul in Rome, Epaphroditus becomes ill. And it's not just a minor ailment, it's a serious illness. It's so serious that he almost died. In fact, Paul repeats that phrase twice. He almost died. And news that Epaphroditus is seriously ill gets back to his home church in Philippi. And obviously, they're anxious. The person that they sent is now seriously ill. But Epaphroditus doesn't die. God has mercy on him. And whether that was through a direct healing or simply the fact that he got better, we don't know. But he did recover, and Epaphroditus is no longer ill. But Epaphroditus has heard that the folks back home have heard about his illness, and so he's upset to think that they think he's ill, and he wants to see them. And Paul had also been upset and anxious about Epaphroditus during his illness, and he'd also probably been anxious about the Philippian Christians who were anxious about Epaphroditus, and now he's anxious about Epaphroditus, who's anxious about the Philippian Christians who are anxious about Epaphroditus. So he decides the best thing to do is to send Epaphroditus back to Philippi, because they'll be glad to have Epaphroditus back, and Paul says, and then I'll have less anxiety. Now I have to say, with all of this anxiety around the place, it's a little bit rich a few verses later for Paul to say, do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. I think, where was that when Epaphroditus was ill? There was a lot of anxiety flying around the place. Well, let's assume Paul had learned his lesson, that he was anxious, but he had prayed, and God had answered his prayer. So the outcome is, he makes the decision to send Epaphroditus back to Philippi. He writes the letter to the church in Philippi, which we have as Philippians. He gives it to Epaphroditus and says, go back. Go back home. Go back to Philippi. And so Epaphroditus goes back to Philippi, taking the letter to the Philippians with him. And when he gets back home, they're so pleased to see him that they immediately take a photo of him with a letter in his hand and put it up on the wall of the church so that they will always remember Epaphroditus. And so the story of Epaphroditus begins with a go to Rome, take these gifts to Paul, and it ends with a go back to Philippi, take this letter to the church, and then Epaphroditus is never mentioned again in the whole of Scripture. He just appears in this letter. He takes a gift to Rome. He takes a letter back to Philippi. That's it. That's all he does. And it would be quite easy for us, really, to sort of think of someone like Epaphroditus and sort of almost to write him off. You know, think, well, he's a bit of a nobody, really, isn't he? He's hardly worth mentioning. Can you really get a sermon out of that? You know, he's the sort of person you might make a list of all the people who we could do sermons about, and we put Epaphroditus down, and then we know, change our minds, cross that name out. We don't really want, it's not worth looking at, is he? There's nothing about him. He's not that significant. He just took gifts and took a letter. In fact, to some people, he might even appear to be a failure, because he was someone who was sent to do a job, but then had to be sent back home because he wasn't able to do the job that he was sent to do. Certainly not in the same league as the great characters that we've looked at so far of Paul and Moses and Jesus himself. So it would be very easy for us just to cross his name out and think, no, he's not that important. It would be easy to do it, but it would be wrong. It would be very wrong to do it, because let's just check out what are the other things that Paul says about Epaphroditus in that little passage that we read. Paul says about Epaphroditus, he's my brother. Well, that's a good start. This is not just some random bloke from a church I once visited. This man is my brother. And Paul says about him, he's my co-worker, which is a term that Paul uses about a dozen times in his letters about people who've been closely involved with him in the work of the gospel. It's some of his closest companions, people like Timothy and Titus and Priscilla and Aquila. Those, the bigger names are people that Paul says are his co-workers. And Paul says about Epaphroditus, he's in the same league as these people. He's a co-worker. And he's a fellow soldier. That's sort of raising the bar even higher. Because this term, fellow soldier, it was actually a sort of a technical term that was used, that where you wanted to honor a soldier, particularly someone who was sort of in the lower ranks, a common soldier, who you wanted to honor, you would refer to him as a fellow soldier. It was a way of sort of saying that he was as brave as his commanding officer. He was as good a soldier as the people who were commanding him. So this little phrase, fellow soldier, meant far more than we realize it means. It was saying, this is someone that we want to honor. Remember, Paul wrote to Timothy and said, join with me in suffering like a good soldier of Christ Jesus. So for Paul to call Epaphroditus a fellow soldier, says this is someone who's fought battles and known suffering and endured hardship. And Paul keeps going and he adds more terms. He said, he is your messenger. And the actual word that Paul uses there in Greek is the word, he's your apostle. And I think he deliberately uses a word that in other contexts is a big word to say, he's someone who was sent to do the work of God. And he was sent to take care of Paul's needs. And again, the word that is used there, an interesting word, the Greek word leitorgos, it's the word from which we get liturgy. It could mean minister, but it was also used in secular Greek, where if there was somebody in a city who was so committed to that city that they would often use their own money and their time and effort on behalf of the city, then this Greek word leitorgos was applied to them. Someone who was regarded as a dignitary, one of the leading officials of a city, would be called by this word. And Paul now takes it and he applies it to Epaphroditus. But even then he hasn't finished. Paul says, as we saw twice, Epaphroditus almost died. And the second time that he uses that phrase in verse 20, he uses a specific phrase that he went almost as far as death. And just a few verses earlier, Paul has talked about someone else who was obedient as far as death, and uses exactly the same word that he'd used when he was talking about Jesus, who was obedient as far as death. Epaphroditus was ill almost as far as death. He's almost saying it's as if Epaphroditus is in following the example of Jesus, who was willing to even lay down his life. And it was for the work of Christ. What he was doing was the work of Christ. He wasn't just taking a gift. He was doing the work of Christ. He wasn't just carrying a letter. He was doing the work of Christ. What Epaphroditus did to Paul was as much the work of Christ as preaching the gospel and planting churches. And there's even more, because Paul says he risked his life. Now, this is one of those things that, again, we miss in English, because it's a sort of a play on words, because he actually says he gambled his life. It's a gambling term. He gambled with his life. And when a Greek person was gambling, before they rolled the dice, they would often call on the name of a particular Greek goddess. Can we have that picture up of the Greek goddess? Very difficult to find appropriate pictures of Aphrodite, but I found one that was reasonably appropriate. They would call on the goddess Aphrodite, and they would have this little saying, when they rolled the dice, they would say, favorite of Aphrodite. In other words, I want to win. I'm the favorite of Aphrodite. What do you think that is in Greek? Epaphroditos, favorite of Aphrodite. It's exactly the same as the name of this man. It's a gambling term, favorite of Aphrodite. And Paul says he gambled with his life. He was a risk taker. He was a gambler who gambled with his own life to do the job that he was sent to do the work of Christ. This is the man that we might have been tempted to write off as a nobody who did nothing significant, maybe even to think of him as a failure. But to Paul, he's a brother, a co-worker, a fellow soldier, an apostle, a minister, someone like Jesus who's doing the work of Christ, who's a risk taker. And so Paul says to the church at Philippi, welcome him in the Lord with great joy and honor people like him. Because people like Epaphroditus deserve to be honored, not written off, not regarded as failures, but honored for their work in the Lord. So we might have written him off, but we shouldn't. So now that we know his story and we know what Paul thought of him, what are we going to do with that? Interesting, maybe, to know it, but what are we going to do with it? Well, I think there are two questions I want to ask. And the first is this, and I think for some people this will be the main question, which is, do you sometimes see yourself as a bit of an Epaphroditus? You know, maybe when you think about yourself, you think, I'm never going to be a well-known figure. I'm never going to do anything of great significance in the work of God. The only things I ever seem to do are the small, insignificant things. Maybe things like taking a gift or taking a letter, the things that Epaphroditus did. Maybe you look at yourself and you think of yourself, yeah, I'm a bit like that. Well, you need to know how God sees you. Because the things that we often see as small and insignificant, God sees as the work of Christ. Those things that you do behind the scenes that other people don't always see, that you probably never get any credit for. You're probably never going to get a mention in the B magazine for what you do. You're never going to get a write-up in the New Wine magazine. You'll just do it secretly and quietly behind the scenes. Maybe the only people who will know about it are you and the person to whom you do something that God calls you to do. But God says to you, that is the work of Christ. Don't see yourself as someone who just does something that's insignificant. Even those small things done behind the scenes are the work of Christ. Or maybe if you do see yourself as a bit of an Epaphroditus, maybe you think that other people see you as a failure. Maybe sometimes you even think of yourself as a failure. Maybe you felt that God was calling you to go, and so you went, but it didn't work out. So there was a go back. Maybe like Epaphroditus, because of health. I think of someone like Rena Cardi, one of our own St. Bees mission partners. Many of you will know Rena. Rena heard the call of God to go to Thailand, not to preach the gospel, not to plant churches, but to go and to homeschool one child, Amy Gray, the daughter of two of our other mission partners, Malcolm and Sheshtin Gray. Not in the big league of planting churches and preaching gospel, in the bigger league, in God's eyes, of doing the unseen work that released Malcolm and Sheshtin to do what they were doing. And so Rena went to homeschool Amy Gray. But Rena became ill. And on the instruction of her insurance company, it was a go back. So Rena had to come back home early and for some months had to process all that was involved in that experience, feeling a bit like Epaphroditus. Now, for Rena, the story has wonderfully become another go because her health improved and she got the all clear from the doctors and the insurance to go back to Thailand, where she's now back for a third year. And so for Rena, the go and a go back became a go again. And that's a great story to be able to say she's back there again. But it's not always like that. I think of Mike. I've got Mike's permission to use him as an example. Mike Doré over here, who heard the call of God to go to Senegal. Again, like Rena, to teach. Mike didn't go to plant churches, didn't go to preach the gospel. Mike went to do those other things that are so necessary for the mission of God to happen. He went to teach the children of missionaries, working in a secondary school, teaching music and geography and history. He heard a call to go. He went. But then he got ill. And that go became a go back. And so Mike's back here with us now this evening. And there hasn't been another go. It hasn't been possible for Mike to go again. It's just a go back. And so it's a bit like Epaphroditus, isn't it? we have in our congregation people for whom this is relevant stuff. How do we deal with things like that when it happens to us? How do we deal with it when it happens to people we know and love? Maybe for you it wasn't about going overseas. Maybe you felt God was calling you to move within the UK, and you told people that it was going to happen, and then it didn't. I can think of, in the time I've been here at St. Bees, people that we've prayed for from the platform who sensed God was calling them to move to another part of the country, and they're still in St. Bees because it just didn't work out. Or maybe you sensed that God was calling into a new career, a new job, and you started out in it, but it just didn't work out. And so you had to go back to your previous job. And so you feel a bit like Epaphroditus and wonder whether people think of you as a failure. Or maybe even sometimes in your darker moments, think of yourself and wonder whether you're a failure. You need to know God doesn't see that, any of that, as failure. God says to you, if you see yourself as an Epaphroditus, the Lord Jesus says to you, you're my brother, my sister, my co-worker, my fellow soldier. You were sent like an apostle. You're a minister. You're someone like Jesus. You're doing the work of Christ. Well done for taking the risk and going. So that it didn't work out. But well done for taking the risk. Well done for going, even though it didn't work out as you planned. So if the first question is, do you see yourself as an Epaphroditus? The second question is, well, do you know an Epaphroditus? Well, you do know one. You know a Mike Doré, who's here with us this evening. Someone who took a risk, heard a go and took a risk, stepped out, but it didn't work out the way they'd hoped and planned, and it became a go back. How are we going to relate to people like that? How are we going to treat them? Paul's command to the Philippians is very clear. Welcome them in the Lord with great joy. Honor people like that. That's what God tells us to do, to honor people like that. So this evening, Mike, we honor you for your courage in going to Senegal, obeying the call of God, being willing to go and facing all that you face there and having to come back. We honor you in the name of Christ for your willingness to do that. And we welcome you back with great joy. We're delighted that you're back with us. You know, we would love you still to be there, but we're thrilled that you're back because we love you and it's a joy to have you back with us. We're proud of you for going. We need to develop this culture, don't we, of honoring those who take the risks. So what if it doesn't work out? They took the risk. They did what many of us have never done. They took the risk and went. So we speak of them with great respect and honor, and we speak to them with great respect and honor. Because one of the things that we want to be, one of the things that we've actually put in print in our vision booklet is that we want to be a faith-led, risk-taking church. You've all signed up for that, haven't you? That's the sort of church you want to be a part of, faith-led, risk-taking. And that's why we love people like Epaphroditus, because he risked his life. He was a risk-taker. He was a godly gambler. He gambled with his life and said, I'm prepared to take the risk, even with my own life, to serve God. And the reality is this. Some of those faith-led risks that we take will work out wonderfully well. And by the grace of God, we'll tell the stories to our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren and our great-great-grandchildren, because I intend to live to a ripe old age. We'll tell them to friends, present and future, the stories of the risks that the way we had hoped. And we'll honor those who took those risks. But sometimes faith-led risks that we take may not work out. And when that happens, we need to tell those stories as well. And we need to honor the people who took those risks as well. Because in the eyes of God, they are just as much to be honored for the risks that they took that were faith-led risks. It's not whether it works out or not that matters. We sometimes have this wrong view of faith, that if only we have enough faith, it will always work out wonderfully well. And we need to read Hebrews, because it says, Hebrews, some by faith escaped the sword. It's great stories. People were trying to kill them, and some by faith escaped the sword. And then a few verses later it says, and some by faith were put to death by the sword. Doesn't always work out the same way. It's the faith that God honors, the faith that leads us to take risks. That's what God honors. That's what he honors in Epaphroditus, that he was a faith-led, risk-taking person. And we honor him for that, even though it didn't work out the way he'd hoped.